It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. A pair of Wisconsin underwater archaeologists and maritime historians locate the wreckage of a lost ship from over a century ago near Algoma's Lake Michigan shoreline. We explore the schooner Trinidad and what you wonder about. Call in with a question, share your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Bob Jake is a board member of the Wisconsin Underwater Archaeological Association and a Great Lakes shipwreck hunter. Bob, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thank you for having me on your morning show.
Good morning. So it takes 2 years for you to find the remains of the Trinidad, which sank in Lake Michigan in 1881. How did the historical documents you dug up lead you and fellow shipwreck hunter Brendan Baylod to the Trinidad?
Well, Brendan and I, we both research shipwrecks. We're really all about the history. And he has shipwrecks he's interested in. I have shipwrecks I'm interested in. And there's shipwrecks that we're both interested in. This one was primarily Brendan's, and he did the bulk of the research. But we could combine our resources research and physical resources like boats, sonars, and things like that. And we go out looking for these things.
You also were studying shipping lanes, and I'm wondering what that impact had on finding the location of the Trinidad.
The shipping lanes are very important. Generally, the vessels would try to follow lanes, mainly to give some organization to it, but to their sailing, but also to make it more efficient between different harbors. So we look at where the shipping lane was off Algoma, Wisconsin, and that gives us a clue as to where the Trinidad might have gone down.
So after abandoning the sinking ship with eight-person crew, the Trinidad captain, John Higgins, left accurate descriptions of where the vessel went down. But your colleague, Brendan Baylod, says few people, if any, had searched for the Trinidad. Why were you the only ones looking for this ship?
I had talked with some of the older divers and shipwreck hunters, and they knew about it. But at that time in the 60s and 70s, they just did not have the technology to dive at those depths. Since that time, there are divers now diving to those depths. And so that opened it up for us to go out there and look for it and get divers on it to study what happened and to learn from it. So we decided to go after it. It was findable with the information we had. And so we just went for it.
As you studied what happened and learned about the wreck, the records suggesting maintenance by the Trinidad's owners that was lacking and the ship was prone to leaking. How did you learn about the ship's poor upkeep?
It's in the historical records. We could see that they just were not maintaining it. And by reading the historical records, we could see that it was leaking all the time. And they just were not, the vessel was built above normal standards of the day. But once it went into service, the maintenance just was not being done at the level it needed to be. And oddly enough, most vessels of that type had two bilge pumps. This one, they had added a third bilge pump because it was leaking so much rather than fix whatever they needed to fix.
And this was the Trinidad's final voyage?
Yes. Yes, it was. It was going from Port Huron to Chicago with a cargo of coal.
We are talking about the discovery of the Trinidad shipwreck in Lake Michigan with shipwreck hunter Bob Jake. You can join in the conversation with your questions and your perspectives at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Bob, you created a search area 10 miles out from Algoma that was 2 miles wide, 4 miles long. And once you were out on the water operating sonar equipment, how did you discover the shipwreck?
We had set aside 2 days to do this, and we went out there on July 15th. Unfortunately, a few days before that, there was a strong wind, and the wind was dying down, but it was still strong. So that first day on July 14th, it was really rough. and we were bouncing around, and we were right at the limit of what we thought we could handle and what the sonar could do. We completed almost half of the search and wrapped it up early that day, and we were feeling just terrible. And so we decided to get out early the next morning. It had really calmed down. So then we went out on July 15th, and we just had completed the first pass, and we came up on a target. Because of the speed, we were going a little faster than we normally would. But the morning was so good, we decided to pick up the speed on the boat to cover as much area as possible with the good weather. We talked about it for about 45 seconds, if we should go back and slow down and get better images of it. We weren't sure. So we did do that. We turned our boat around, went back over it, and we could tell right away we had a shipwreck.
Mm.
And we were pretty elated. But the next thing we did then was we stayed on site for about 2 hours, going back and forth at different angles over it to generate more images. So by the time we left there and went back to Algoma, we were about 95% sure we had found the Trinidad. And then we immediately on shore contacted the state underwater archaeologist.
Mm. How did you feel in that moment when you were almost certain that this was it?
We were elated. We were really happy. We just couldn't believe it. You know, this thing's been missing for so long, and this is going to add so much to Wisconsin's cultural history, underwater cultural history. It really was a major find for us. We were very happy.
When divers are exploring a new shipwreck site like this one, what precautions do you take as you like move around the wreckage and you make observations?
Well, what happened next after that was the state realized the importance of it. So then they brought out a professional ROV operator, and that's remote operated vehicle, Tom Crossman. So he came out August 3rd with his boat, and he put down a very expensive remote operated vehicle with archival quality sonar on it. Mm-hmm. So he was able to get sonar images of the entire vessel and photos. So the first thing we really all were looking for was fishing gear on there. Was there nets on there or fishing line, something that would endanger the lives of the fisher, of the divers, or even the ROV getting snagged on it. So safety was number one.
You have discovered several other shipwrecks in the Great Lakes. What is different about the Trinidad's condition?
It is, outside of the mast being down, it's almost fully intact. There's three cargo hatches. Of those three, two of them still have the covers on them, which is almost unheard of. The stern deck house is fully intact, and some of the windows still have the glass in them. I mean, this is just phenomenal. And we don't even know how it survives the sinking, going to the bottom and impacting the bottom and then staying all together like this. It was just, it was beyond our dreams.
Mm. I wonder why the ship could be so well preserved. Like how did that happen?
Water temperature was part of that. Being in the Great Lakes is another part of it. If it was in salt water, it would have been consumed within a few years by worms. So it was like in cold storage down there. Mm. And with this ship being built so well, even though it was leaking, it still was built above standards of the time. So it was able to survive that impact with the lake bottom and just waited to be found.
Mm. Wisconsin underwater archaeologist and maritime historian Bob Jake with us, our guide to his recent discovery of a well-preserved Lake Michigan shipwreck in Wisconsin waters. You can be part of the discussion. Call in with a question. Share your comments at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore the recent discovery of a long-lost schooner near the shoreline of Algoma on Lake Michigan. And we meet one of the shipwreck hunters who found the remarkably intact Trinidad after 2 years searching for it. You can join the conversation calling in with a question, sharing your perspective along the way. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Bob Jake is a board member of the Wisconsin Underwater Archaeology Association. Bob, Wisconsin seeks to manage and protect most abandoned shipwrecks in Wisconsin waters. How did you help ensure the security of the Trinidad site?
We did that by contacting our state underwater archaeologists, and they are the protectors of our underwater resources by law. And so then she immediately contracted to get Tom Crossman out there with his remote operated vehicle on August 3rd. But then she did a follow-up with that on August 8th. Tammy and another diver named Zach Whitrock dove down on that wreck. And so what they do is they're not using typical scuba diving gear. They're using a closed circuit rebreathers because of the depth. This is around 270 feet deep. So they went down there, and Zach took thousands and thousands of photos, and Tammy took pictures. But Zach's cameras were taking a photo roughly every half a second. And what he does with that then is he has those photos using a computer program stitched together, and that creates a 3D model of this that we can see the entire vessel. And then Tammy went and took photos of specific things. And that's part of the process because they're photo preserving what's there. So as things degrade over the years, they can see what's happening. They can also see if somebody would steal something, which is illegal, that they could say, well, this item was part of this shipwreck at this time on this date. Hmm. So it's part of the protection of it.
But it is, as you mentioned, so far below the surface, you need specialized equipment to reach the wreck. Is that right?
Yes, it is. Yes. Typical scuba diving is good for about 130 feet. And with this being 270, they're using, like I said, these closed circuit rebreathers.
Let's bring on a call now. Steve is with us in Sheboygan. Hi, Steve.
Hello, how are you? And hi, Bob, Steve.
Hi, Steve.
I think we know each other.
Yes.
I just want to congratulate, and I just want to mention that Bob is actually absolutely right. Years ago, back in the late 70s and 80s, there was a fellow from Two Rivers, Brendan, Barnard, by the name of Barnard. He looked for it, and we also looked for it a couple of times, sliding past when we came out of Sturgeon Bay. But again, where you found it was about 2 miles further out than where we were looking for it. And
Steve, how did you become a shipwreck hunter?
Exactly the same way that Bob did. Lucky years ago, I tagged along with one of the premier shipwreck hunters of the Great Lakes by the name of John Steele. He and I became good friends, and we started traveling all over the Western Great Lakes together looking for shipwrecks, and we were actually pretty successful. Mm. And it also then morphed into going after the history, and then we all became minor historians. I belong to some of the same organizations that Bob does. And
it sounds like there's a true community around this. Bob, how did you get so involved in this work?
I actually became interested in the history when I was at a bookstore in the late 70s on Great Lakes shipwrecks. And I read the book and I couldn't put it down. I went and bought a couple more books the next day. And I just started looking at the history of it. And then I decided to go to a local dive store and get certified in scuba diving. I wanted to see some of this stuff. So that's how it became a passion of mine. I don't really think of myself as a shipwreck hunter. I think of myself as a history hunter.
A history hunter, a maritime history hunter for the Great Lakes. And that kind of leads me to, how does someone do what you do? How do you start viewing and searching for shipwrecks? What are those initial steps to get started?
I would say meeting people like Steve, who was just on, or myself. And I go through a lot of old microfilms, looking at primary source materials as close as I can, reading up on the vessels. Also, Wisconsin has an incredible website called WisconsinShipwrecks.org. And that is a really good place to start. Also, it has the contact information for our state underwater archaeologist. Any questions or any help with anything, you can reach out to them. And also on that site, there's information about field work they've done and lighthouses.
Steve, thank you so much for calling in. As we talk with Bob Jake, who found the Trinidad shipwreck off of Algoma in Lake Michigan, you can join in with your questions about Great Lakes shipwrecks, 800-642-1234. Let's go to Patrick now in Madison. Hi, Patrick.
Hi. So, Bob, congratulations. And just a shout out, I play hockey with Brendan in Sun Prairie, and just love talking with him about shipwrecks. And I grew up on the Great Lakes, and my question is are there other shipwrecks that, hunters or historians are looking for right now? I know there's a lot of freighters that went down that haven't been found. Just curious about that.
Patrick, thanks so much for the call. Go ahead, Bob.
Wisconsin has roughly on record about, on the historical record, around 720 to 750 shipwrecks. And of that number, 225 roughly have been found and identified. So there's more to be found. And there are other ones on our list to look for.
How do you expect the discovery of this shipwreck will be studied by other researchers?
There's going to be more divers going on this, and they're going to look inside the cabins and things. They will study just how the ship held up all these years so well. Also, the rigging on this ship is part of the story. This was one of the early vessels with metal rigging. So when it sank, it kept the mast, even though the mast fell over, the masts are all still there, held in place by the rigging. And if it had rope rigging, it might not have held as well.
When the ship went down, the crew was able to get from the ship safely. Is that right? But I do understand the crew's dog, their mascot, wasn't able to make it.
Correct. The vessel was taking on water, and so they had all the pumps going. But then all of a sudden, the vessel lurched forward by the bow and went down. They had no time to get any belongings or to do anything. All eight men ran for the yawl boat and jumped in it. And as they were doing that, the vessel went down, and the captain's dog was down below sleeping by the stove. And they couldn't get him, and he couldn't get out in time. And so the dog went down with the vessel, which is very tragic. Mm.
Why are the Straits of Mackinac and this, the area around the Great Lakes, so difficult for schooners like this? Why is navigation dangerous?
Well, back in those days, there were a lot of forests. So there was forest fires. There was also fog, the regular weather that we run into here. Also, a lot of these occurred in October and November, especially November. They were making the last runs of the year, and the weather was getting bad. So you'd leave port, you would have overloaded ship. That was another thing. They would overload their ships quite often. And then these storms would come in, very strong November storms on overloaded vessels that were at the end of the season, probably needed all their maintenance. And they did not have the navigation equipment we have today. And so all this just conspired to create a lot of shipwrecks.
Hmm. Bob, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me, Kate.
Bob Jake is a board member of the Wisconsin Underwater Archaeological Association and an amateur Great Lakes shipwreck hunter, although I think he prefers that he's a maritime historian. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.